Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things? They asked. What's this wisdom that has been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he's performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home. He could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. He was amazed at their lack of faith.
It's good to be back with you. My body is still not really sure what time zone I'm in. I was in Australia on Thursday was home one night for a tornado. Fortunately, it didn't touch down, but it was enough excitement to keep us awake. And now I'm in Indianapolis. To make matters worse, it's colder in Fort Worth than it is here. And since I've been to the land down under, we've done a flip-flop. I look over here and y'all aren't there. And then there's almost an aisle. So I'm totally confused. So whatever comes out today, I pray is the Holy Spirit's doing and not Philip's total confusion, okay? When I was in fifth grade, a bunch of wisecracking fifth grade boys said, let's see if we can figure out something that God can't do. You ever done anything stupid like that? And one guy came up with the answer, yeah, God can't make a rock that God can't lift. Now think about that one a little bit. You probably heard that one before. And that's kind of silly. But it's kind of stuff we do sometimes. But this morning, I want to talk about something Jesus can't do. Not that he won't do, but what he can't do. That's almost blasphemous. The first time I ever said that, I kind of expected to be the main fricassee on the menu that morning. But in this story, it's really tragic and sad. The story of Jesus going to his hometown. And when he goes to his hometown, he preaches good stuff and his folks react to him. And they don't have faith. And he's astounded at their lack of faith. Just like they're astounded at his wisdom because they saw him grow up. We know you. You know, back in the feed store days when we had horses and live out in the country, I remember learning to play 42 with guys at the feed store. And then I played 42 with some buddies at school, and we learned about this weird thing called Nello. Okay, some of you that have ever played 42 know what that's about. So I thought I'd go Nello at the feed store. And one of the guys at the table at the feed store that was a lot older and crustier than I didn't say a word. He just went and spit tobacco on my boot. That was his way of saying, we don't go Nello around here, boy. That's what he was telling me. And that's basically what they did to Jesus. Now, when we look at this story, there's something I want us to think about. I'm going to ask you to do something. I don't know why we don't do this. This is a biblical thing. In Acts, sermons were sometimes called dialogues. That meant there was talking going on both ways. I guess preachers today are too weenie to allow that to happen anymore. But I want to know, why do you think Mark includes this story? I want you to tell somebody next. Why do you think Mark put this story in his gospel, okay? So just talk to folks next to you. Just see if you can come up with something. Come on. I'm giving you permission to talk in church. Come on. Why did he include this one? Some of you are going, I still can't talk in church. My mom will rise from the dead and thump me in the back of the ear. What's that? You're wondering what 42 is? Well, don't worry about that. That's a Southern Church of Christ game that the devil invented. All right. I think you've talked about it a little bit. Anytime you read a story in one of the four Gospels, that's a question you need to ask. Mark's the shortest Gospel. When he tells a story, he uses the most descriptive language. But what he selected to use, he selected led by the Holy Spirit for a reason. And while the Gospels are kind of biographies about Jesus, they're told for a reason. There's a reason that's there. So anytime we go to a Gospel, we need to say, why is it there? Was it simply to say, Jesus' family didn't believe? We already know that from Mark 3. Jesus is doing a bunch of miracles. And while he was doing the miracles, he just kept going and kept going. And he was so involved and caught up in his ministry, his brothers and sisters are sent to get him because they think he's lost his mind. We know in John 7 that his brothers didn't believe, and they kind of teased him and ridiculed him about it, and that they didn't believe until he rose from the dead, and that's one of the reasons he appeared to his brother James. So I don't think that's Mark's point, to say his family, his overall family didn't believe. I mean, it's important that we know that, but that's not the biggest reason. And the real thing we need to ask is this a message for us? Is it a message for us and about us? Because Mark was writing to believers later, telling this story to them. And so the question is, what does Jesus want us to hear in this story? Lord, what are we to do with this? Why did Mark take precious time to tell this story? And what's so important about it? So maybe, and I know I've thrown a bunch of questions at you, but maybe this is the most important question. Where is Jesus' hometown today? Where is Jesus' hometown today? Let's go back and read this story. You saw it. You grasp it a little bit, but I want us to slowly read through this story, and I'll make a couple of comments as we go. Mark 6, verse 1. Now, he's coming from doing an amazing miracle, but he did it privately. You remember this little girl has died. She's 12 years old. And everybody's mourning, and they're upset because Jesus didn't get there soon enough to keep her from dying, and he tells her she's not really dead, she's just asleep, which became a term for Christians to use for those that died before Jesus returned. The body's asleep, the person's with Jesus. And Jesus goes in and he takes a little girl by the hand and says, Talitha kumi, I say to you, little girl, get up. And then Jesus says, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Just get her something to eat. Sweet, touching, transforming story. And then we find the next story. He left that place, that incredible miracle, that family that was devastated and now full of joy. He left that place and he came to his hometown and his disciples followed him. The word used for hometown is patrida. That doesn't mean anything to you. Wouldn't mean anything to you unless you knew Greek. but it really means fatherland, but we quit using that translation after World War II. Right? It just was not an appropriate term to use anymore after the fatherland and Hitler's use of that term so much. But it means fatherland. Pater is father. Patria is the fatherland. It's where we come from. We're all kinfolks. And he's going to use two other terms in just a minute. So he goes to his fatherland, his place, his people, and his disciples following. They're there to learn from him. They're there to grab a hold of something. It's almost like he's saying, are you a disciple? Then come with me on this journey. See, we're being invited into the story. Verse 2. On the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue. And many who heard him were astounded. This is a powerful word. Absolutely blew their gaskets. They didn't have a place to put this. This was so totally unexpected. They just didn't know where it came from. So they said, where did this man get all this? Get that emphasis? This man. Nothing special about him. He's just a dude. What is this wisdom that has been given to him? Yeah, it had to be given to him because we saw him grow up. We know this ain't this boy. We know Yeshua. And Yeshua and Yeshua and Yeshua. That was Jesus was a very common name. It's the same name for Joshua. We cherish the name Jesus, but lots of little boys were named Jesus. We know this man. What deeds of power are being done by his hands? They were totally surprised. Don't you find that interesting? For 30 years he lived in this place. For 30 years. And nobody that lived around him expected anything special, much less spectacular. So then they start getting nasty. Is not this the carpenter? Now, if you have an older, like King James, it may say the carpenter's son. And the reason is they chose some manuscripts that were pretty new and kind of tried to dress up this because they didn't want to have this read in church. Because what's said here is really nasty. All right, you with me? Is this not the carpenter? Yeah, we saw him from when he was 12 years old and his daddy was alive for the last two decades. He's been the carpenter in the family. He's just a carpenter. But then they go a step further and they get really nasty. This is Mary's boy. We know Joseph wasn't his daddy. What they're saying with this term is we could use two terms that you hear regularly in movies that I'm not going to say from this pulpit, but that's what they were saying to him. A third term we sometimes use is horrible. Illegitimate child. There's no such thing as an illegitimate child. They're people that came into the world whose parents maybe jumped the gun on some things. But there is no illegitimate child. Every child is a child that is precious in the sight of God. But they were using a term a lot nastier than that to say, that's who you are. And look, he's just the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon, and his sisters are here with us. So they've gone from being astounded to going, oh, don't act so high and mighty. We know who you are. You're not even supposed to be here. Your family pretended that you're one of theirs, but you're not. And oh yeah, your brothers and sisters all still live here and we're just folks. Don't be so high and mighty. And they took offense at him. They stumbled. That word offense is the word for stumbled. Don't cause a brother to stumble. They stumbled. They couldn't believe in him because they knew him too well. They had been around him too much. And then Jesus said to them, prophets are not without honor, except, and he uses three terms for family, in his fatherland, his hometown, among his own kin, his kinfolks, and people in his own house. Does that help you know who wasn't believing in him? The folks in his place he comes from, and his cousins, his brothers and sisters. And look at verse 5. He could do no deed of power there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and cured them. He could not do. He could not do. And the story ends with, and Jesus was amazed at their own unbelief. So my question still stands, where's Jesus' hometown today? Isn't that us? And who's Jesus' family today? Aren't we Jesus' relatives and family? In fact, in chapter 3, when his brothers and sisters came to get him because they thought he was crazy, they come back another day and people are going, Jesus, Jesus, your mother and brothers are here. Jesus, Jesus, your mother and brothers are here. He says, who is my mother and my brothers, my sister? But those who hear the word of God and do it, they're my mother and brother and sisters. You see, Mark is saying, we're the people in the synagogue. We're the homeland. We're the relatives. We're the kinfolks of Jesus. This story is suddenly for us and about us. And we're invited into it to learn something important and powerful and special. And once we realize that, this story has a bite that is sharp. And harsh. And what this story asks us is this one simple question. What are we not allowing Jesus to do because of our lack of faith? Isn't that what this story is asking us? He comes to us. He longs to do great things. But we're very familiar with him, aren't we? Some of us were even raised, don't expect Jesus to do anything spectacular today. All that ended with the apostles. And we wonder why people won't believe in the living Lord. Lord, have mercy on us for such blasphemy. But he couldn't do anything because we didn't expect him to do anything. If I've told this before, I apologize, but it is one of the most transformative things I've ever heard in my life, and I heard it when I was a freshman in college. Landon Saunders was speaking on a Wednesday night, and he said, I was speaking to a group of Chinese students. Now remember, this is a long time ago because I'm on Medicare. I'm an old dude. All right? I turned 65 on my birthday, the last day of the year, and you know, the sky hadn't fallen completely, but I do have a Medicare card now. So it was a long time ago when I heard this. I was 19 years old. When communism was in full bloom in China and it was really rugged, and this young Chinese student in the northeast of the United States heard the message of Jesus And she very kindly and respectfully said, "So you're saying Jesus is raised from the dead?" "Yes." "That means he's alive?" "Yes." She goes, "It means I can know him." "Yeah." "Yeah." But if we don't believe that, if we become so familiar with the church stuff that we forget that Jesus, who's living and real, then he comes to us, to church, not the synagogue, and he comes to his own fatherland and his own kinfolks and among his own family, and he longs to do something great. And if we're honest, we would love that Jesus would just come and all he could do was heal a few people, right? We'd be pretty thrilled with that. Although we have been a lot better to pray for Jesus to heal people. I still believe in praying for the hands of the doctors, but I really want the action of the great physician, right? I want him to heal people. We'd be happy with that. That's all he could do there because of their lack of faith. Well, what if they had invited him to do more? What if we invited him to do more? What are we not allowing Jesus to do because of our lack of faith? You see, the truth is, Jesus in his sovereign grace, his sovereign will, often waits to see if we will ask in faith before he will do what he longs to do. Now, we know that deep in our hearts, don't we? He's waiting for us to ask. He's waiting for us to pray to him. He's waiting for us to invite him in. James, his half-brother, in James 4 says, "What causes the wars and fightings among you? Why do you murder each other with your words? Why do you covet things? Why are you so ugly to each other?" But because you have needs and you don't ask. And when you ask just for selfish stuff for you so that you can spend it on your foolish pleasures. What's he saying? You're not inviting Jesus in to do great things among you. You remember his promise? Ask and you'll receive. Seek and you'll find. Knock and the door will be open to you. Jesus, in his sovereign grace, in his sovereign will, he waits for us to ask in expectation before he does things. Why? Why don't you just do them? Because the world needs to see people love God like Jesus loved God, who are people like them. Because the world needs to see people love each other regardless, like Jesus loved them. If there's any one testimony the world needs from the church today, is to see us love each other and others, as Adrian talked about in communion, with a grace that is fierce, a love that is bold, a compassion that is not pity, but genuine concern to walk along beside people. Yeah, the world is looking for folks to love God like Jesus did, that have skin like them, that love others like Jesus did. And the world's looking for a group of people that are ready to do something great in the world that they don't think is possible. And the question is, Do we want to be those people that love God that way, that love others that way, that do something great in the world that way? Or do we want to just go to church? I know our heart. I know deep, deep, deep down in our heart, we want to be those things. I know you want to be those things. But we kind of get bored with church. It gets to be the routine. It's a good routine. And we sing good songs, and we have good communion, and we have some friends. And, you know, but let's be honest, it's boring sometimes. We know what's going to happen. We don't think anything spectacular is going to happen today. And so it just gets to be church. And if Jesus shows up, that's almost a little scary. But you know, the transition between preachers is a great time for us to awaken our best angels, the things inside us that make us Christian disciples. So, I want to challenge you. There's two things that go with this question right here. First thing is, out here on a shelf, it's not in the prayer zone, although there is a prayer request box here, and you can place requests in there, and we'll pray for them anytime. But out here on a shelf in the foyer, there's a sign up, and we've got a 24-hour prayer cycle, and we need lots of folks that will commit to give 30 minutes to prayer sometime Friday and Saturday of next week. And there's lots of blank spots. My name's on there for an hour. I'll be praying when I'm flying next week to get here. And I'm not going to be praying for a safe trip. I'm going to be praying for you guys. I think you know I've committed to fast and pray every Tuesday for what we're doing here as a church, and I invite you to choose your time and your place to do that. But I want to encourage you to sign up. The other thing I'm going to ask you to do is next Sunday, when it comes time for the offering, did y'all hear what Adrian challenged us to do today at the offering? I made my shoes a little tight. My underwear felt a little small, Adrian. It's a little uncomfortable. Because he was basically saying, don't just put money in the plate, put yourself. Offer your whole self. Well, next Sunday I'm going to challenge you to answer that question. What's one thing you will ask in faith for Jesus to do that we cannot do without His showing up and doing it? Okay? Now that means you're not going to just stick a card in the plate that has that on there, although I'm asking for that, but it means you're going to pray for that every day the rest of this year. For Jesus to do something that we couldn't do if He didn't show up. Because I don't want to be like this group of folks in Nazareth that claim to be Jesus' relatives that are shocked when He does something great. I want to be the folks that expect Jesus to do something spectacular with this ordinary old Medicare card-carrying dude from Texas and this group of precious people who belong to Jesus in Indianapolis. Do you believe it can happen? This week I will go, Lord willing, if I get home tonight, this week I'll go to Austin, Texas to see a Chinese spiritual daughter named Melody who's staying with her sister Karen, her niece Kaylee, our brother-in-law Bill, She'll be there with her fiancé named Dennis. She wants my approval to marry Dennis. She wants Donna's approval to marry Dennis. This is a little girl born in a hole in the ground in southern China. Dirt poor peasants. Her older sister raised her from the time her older sister was 8 and a half and she was 6 and a half. They had nothing. And they worked their tails off to do well in school and go to a second-rate college in China. And Melody didn't know it, but the language professor at her college, who was married to a seated member of the Communist Party, this dean wanted her students to meet Jesus and Christians. And so she had prayed, and she finally got them to a school in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And so Melody, when she was a freshman, she went out of the country for the first time. And God put her with me. Studied with her for 4 years. Only took her sister, too. She became a Christian. And her world is totally different. She's opening a law office in Germany, multilingual. Knows Christians from all over the world. Has a bright future, but still wants spiritual permission from a dude from Texas to get married. That's just one life that was changed because a church in Chiang Mai, China, when Jesus showed up, believed that he could do more than they could ask or imagine. 300 interns have gone through that one church in 30 years. 300, half American, half Asian. Leaders all over the church in Asia have been mentored in that one place. Well over 1,000 Asians have come to know Jesus in this one church in Chiang Mai, Thailand. You wouldn't have even known about it if I hadn't told you about it. Why? Because they were willing to pray that Jesus would show up and do what they could never do on their own, and they expected him to do it. And we can too. We can too. And maybe the most exciting thing to me is if we can get our blinders off and just see what some of our missionaries are doing in the world, we'll realize God's already doing that here. Through us, just far away. So let's ask Jesus to do it here. But for that to begin, we have to mean the song that we're about to sing. So I'm going to ask you to go ahead and stand up. All right, we're going to get ready to sing this song. This is a song that I didn't know we were going to sing it. I didn't know Joey had selected it. This is a song I sang every day during a dark year of my life. And it's our invitation to say, Jesus, we want you to show up among your kinfolk. And we want you to be you. All of you. The spectacular you. We expect you to make us more than we can ask or imagine. So let's sing this prayer. And if you have a need, feel free to come. Elders will be at the back with their wives. And others will be around you that'll be willing to pray. But most of all, Jesus, we want you to be real. We believe you can do more than we've let you do. And so we invite you to do it now. Now, let us know you.